Did you know some medications prescribed to children for mental illness are not even tested on children? I'm Kendra Semin. Listen to this insightful episode with licensed mental health counselor Matthew Stanford on how to know if medication is the right choice for your child's path to wellness.
God's Word promises in Proverbs 3:6 that if we acknowledge Him in everything we do, He will direct our paths. This statement holds true not only for America, but also for our daily lives. The gospel message is simple. Put God first in everything you do. Matthew 6:33 and Luke 10:27 say this: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." Next, love your neighbor unconditionally. Luke 10:27 says, "You are to love your neighbor as yourself." Next, love your neighbor unconditionally. Luke 10:27 says, "You are to love your neighbor as yourself." And lastly, fulfill the Great Commission. Mark 16:15 says, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel," that is, the good news, "to every creature." If you want to see America continually blessed, now is the time to step out in faith and spread the good news. This is faith in action. Wherever we go, every faithful Christian is compelled, through obedience to Jesus, to share His simple three-step gospel message all across our land. For more information, please go to the website at www.putgodfirstamerica.com. That's www.putgodfirstamerica.com.
Welcome back. Today I'm here with Dr. Matthew Stanford, an author, professor of psychiatry at the University of Houston, international speaker, and CEO of the Hope and Healing Center. Matthew, we're so excited to have you on today's episode.
Thanks for having me.
So is there anything else about yourself that you'd like to share with our listeners so they can just kind of get to know you a little before we get started?
As you said, I'm in Houston. I run a faith-based organization called the Hope and Healing Center and Institute, and we are very dedicated to kind of helping the church do a more effective job in ministering to people with mental health problems and kind of changing the way people access mental health care. And I would say that I really believe that the church is kind of the answer to the mental health crisis that we've been seeing in this country. Me personally, I'm married and I have four kids, a varying age from 24 to 13.
Great. So you are a CEO of the Hope and Healing Center. What led you to have that position? Do you have a passion for mental health for any particular reason?
A lot of people have a personal story where they have been drawn into mental health care because of that. I really don't. Really, for me, I just, when I took my first intro to neuroscience class, which I frankly just took because a guy in my dorm said, take this class, it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I just was hooked at that point. I became just so fascinated by the brain and how the brain kind of controls particularly our behavior, and that led me to go on and get a PhD in behavioral neuroscience and really work in kind of the neurobiology of kind of impulsive behavior or self-control for many years. And then ultimately, God kind of moved me to be working with faith communities, and really primarily because what we know is that people in psychological distress are more likely to go to a clergy before they go to a mental health care provider or a physician. When they're struggling with these issues, it's a very kind of odd statistic. There's really nothing else like it, but it fascinates me with the potential that the church could play in being kind of both a front door to care, but also a place where people can be supported and cared for long term.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the church aspect, because in your book, you obviously demonstrate that mental health is a taboo topic in many churches, and there's a stigma surrounding it. And you write, "My own research in Christians with mental illness demonstrates that 30 to 40% of them have had a negative interaction, such as having a pastor tell them there is no such thing as mental illness when they seek counseling or assistance from their church. So do you think that that's so because leaders within the church maybe assume depression is a sin, or when it comes to illnesses like ADHD and bipolar, maybe there's just ignorance or a lack of training for leaders?
Yeah, I mean, what we found in that was indeed that in that subset of people where they had that negative interaction, the three most common things they were told basically is that, you know, your mental health problem is a result of personal sin, lack of faith, or the demonic. And so, you know, really it's just, I kind of attribute it to a couple of things. I attribute it, one, to Christians really not understanding how God has created us, you know, how we are physically and non-physically put together. And then also just a real lack of understanding of really what it is that the brain does, or just kind of understanding kind of your personal biology. People just don't, you know, if I say that, you know, you have a kidney problem, then your expectation is that, well, that must mean that the filtering aspects of my blood are off, because that's what a kidney does. It filters your blood. Well, if I say you have a brain problem, suddenly people don't understand that, you know, the function of your brain is thoughts and feelings and things like that. So those are the things that are going to be off, not necessarily under your control. And so I think in faith communities particularly, we have this idea that kind of these ethereal, you know, things like feelings or emotions or thoughts, cognitions, that somehow they are spiritual and separate from us. But in reality, you know, God has made us both physical and non-physical, and we're broken and fallen in all those parts. Mental health problems are really no different than any other problem that might occur in a person's life.
Yeah, that's a common thread that I'm hearing in a lot of people that I've been interviewing so far, is that, hey, you wouldn't reject, you know, for example, chemo if you had cancer. So why is there this stigma surrounding medication or therapy when it comes to mental illness? Because like you said, the brain is an organ just like any other organ in your body. And so we have to really be sure that we're taking care of that too. And medication is not necessarily always the answer, but I think that it's not something that we have to immediately write off as sin, which the church can do sometimes. So it's really good that we address that. And you mentioned demonic. So you do say in your book that there can be spiritual warfare revolving around mental illness, but that the Bible tends to kind of blur the lines a bit. Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think one of the sad things about, you know, knowledge or information or understanding about the demonic is that most people that you interact with in the Christian faith, their knowledge of the demonic really comes more from Frank Peretti novels or movies. Mm. It doesn't really come. The Bible honestly does not say that much about the demonic. There's not a lot of detail there. In fact, Job, the book of Job, is really where you have probably your most detail, other than maybe the temptation of Christ, where you actually have an interaction with the devil. And so there is there's a pretty limited amount of information there. But a couple things. One, the Bible is very clear that it mentions madness, oftentimes separate from demonic possession or demonic influence. I think the gospel writers, where they blur the lines is, you know, these are Eastern Semitic people, and their conceptualization of the world is that everything is under God's control, and that the spiritual world is just as important, in fact, in many sense, more important than the temporal world that we're in. And they see everything through that lens. And so when they talk about Jesus healing someone that has a physical illness, and they say that person was healed, they use exactly the same word as when Jesus cast out a demon, that person was healed. Because in their mind, healing is a spiritual phenomenon, whether that be for a broken bone or epilepsy or the demonic possession or affliction. And I think that's the other thing, is very few examples of what we think of as possession, you know, kind of like the exorcist kind of, you know, the demon takes over a person in the Bible. Most of the time it's an affliction. The devil causes someone to be ill, or a demon causes someone to be ill. So, you know, I don't like to deny what's in the Bible. I believe what's in the Bible. So if it says the demonic can make you sick, then I'm sure they can make you sick. I think what's important is that we be consistent in our theology or in our beliefs, because, you know, I know people that will, you know, they'll argue with me that certain mental health problems are demonic, but then they will never, anyone who has cancer just has cancer. You know, so I mean, I would say if, you know, if you have the spiritual sensitivity to look at a person, say, who has schizophrenia and say, well, this person has organic brain-generated schizophrenia, and this person, their schizophrenia is because of the demonic, even though they look the same, at least to most people. I would hope you'd have the same spiritual sensitivity to say, hey, well, you know, this guy who has liver cancer over here, he has liver cancer, but this one over here, he has cancer because it's demonic. And I just don't think we have that kind of spiritual sensitivity. Now, I know people that have told me they do, but when I bring up physical illnesses, they suddenly don't want to talk anymore. And you have to remember, you know, Job was physically ill, and it was caused by the demonic, but it manifested itself in exactly the same way. He even found relief by draining his boils and things like that. So, I mean, it's, you know, I think we have to be consistent. Let's just, as Christians, understand the demonic is out to thwart the purposes and people of God. All of us as Christians are under demonic attack. We should pray for healing for anyone with a mental health problem. We should pray against the demonic for anyone with a mental health problem. But we should do that for everyone when they are suffering and struggling, and even when they're not. And let's just not look at it differently as we would another illness.
Yeah, really good points, because I think that it can be easy to just assume things, and we don't want to say the wrong thing in the church and perhaps hurt someone or, you know, give them false hope or even false information. And so, in your opinion, how can the church step up to the challenge? Obviously, there needs to be more mental health training for both pastors and the congregation.
Well, I think, number one, we have to realize that people are more likely to come to a church before they go to a physician or a mental health care provider when they're struggling with these problems. That's not something I found. That's something the National Institutes of Health found in these huge epidemiology studies that they've done across the country, looking at how prevalent are certain types of illnesses. So, I mean, there's no other condition like that. I mean, people find out they have pancreatic cancer, that, you know, they didn't go to a church first. You know, they... So if God is sending the people to us, which I don't believe anything is a coincidence, I think it all has a purpose, then I think we should be prepared to deal with that. And so I think, you know, we need to look and see, what are the needs of these individuals? Certainly they may need professional care, which we, you know, can't provide, but we can provide some referral and connection. But they also need spiritual care, and they also need supportive services that we can offer, like support groups and, you know, kind of individual life coaching and things like that. You know, things that we do already from a counseling perspective, we just need to do it within the context of mental illness, and also support of a family, and particularly, you know, family with a child with a mental health problem. I mean, they feel lost and separated. You know, I can't tell you how many families I've met with that they can't even go to church anymore because their child acts out. So they first will start out with one will go and the other will stay home, and they do that for a while, and then after a while they just stop going. Well, you know, a church can be involved in that. A church can assist in that. A church can make special, arrangements or dispensation for that child, or have someone go to the home and keep the child. Well, I mean, they can do things to support and care for that family where that family is still part of that spiritual fellowship. And that's what we need to be doing. So a lot of times I'll say, I really don't want people to do anything differently for people with mental illness than they already do for other people in the church that are suffering. So, you know, if your church steps up when you find out that, you know, Betty Sue has liver cancer, and you start bringing her family casseroles, and the youth group goes over and mows their grass, and they have people come over and pray for them, and those types of things, just do that for the family who found out whose son is in the psychiatric hospital who just got diagnosed with a psychotic disorder. Just do the same thing. And if you want to add in referral, you know, an option for referring them to professional care, great. But if you just want to do the same thing you do for others, just comfort, support, care for, walk along, bear burdens, really, that's all we're asking. A good friend of mine, Amy Simpson, she calls mental illness the no casserole illness. Because, you know, if anything goes wrong in the church, in your family, people start bringing you casseroles. But they don't bring you a casserole when you tell them that, you know, you've got schizophrenia at your house or bipolar disorder. So that's all, you know, that's all I'm saying. It's just do what we normally do. Now, can we do more than that? Absolutely. I think the fact that people are coming makes it just an unbelievable opportunity, both for service to Christ, but also opportunity for evangelism and spiritual growth.
Yeah, that's really good. It goes back to that consistency factor that you were talking about. You know, we shouldn't be turning people with mental illness away without providing help and assistance just because we don't know anything about it or we don't know how to respond. That's not the loving thing to do. So we have to get better at, you know, raising awareness, obviously. And if we don't even know what to do, like you said, just do what we've been doing for everyone else. And I like how you mentioned the identity aspect in your book, especially being aware of it while we're communicating to people. Not, for example, I'm autistic, but I have autism because we're not defined by a disorder. And I used to work for a company that printed special needs textbooks for teachers, and it followed the same advice. So there are probably some parents who wonder how a genetic or a psychological disorder could possibly be God's plan for their child. But in your book, you mention even a child with those disorders are created on purpose to bring God glory. So could you explain that a little more just for encouragement?
Yeah, you know, and I would say, you know, you take everything anybody says with a grain of salt. I mean, I'm a guy on a journey, on a spiritual journey, just like everyone else, and I desperately need a savior like everyone else. And, you know, thank goodness I have Jesus in my life, you know, but for the grace of God type of thing. So, you know, but through my studies of the word and my interactions with families and working, what I see is, you know, we are all horribly broken by sin, and that's original sin, that this broken world we live in. And I think, you know, God creates each one of us, and the scriptures are clear that God is involved in our knitting us together, that he is intimately involved, and he plans out a purpose for our life. And so, you know, I believe that God creates each one of us in that perfect, innocent way that Adam and Eve were originally in the garden when we first are brought together. But then we have to remember that like Adam and Eve after the fall, we are in a broken world. So instantaneously, we are under the assault of toxins and illnesses and bad decisions that our mother might make or our father might make. And then we're exposed to people that make bad decisions and bad environments and poverty. And so we are then under the effect of the environment around us and the others, that people that we interact with. And some of us are brought into an environment that's fairly good. It's still broken and sinful and yearning for a salvation, but it's pretty good, you know, and we do better. And other people are more harsh environments. And so, you know, really what happens is, you know, mental health problems are a combination of biology and environment. And it's no one's fault. It's not caused by, you know, it's not the, you know, that the parents did something wrong and they caused it, unless they abused their child. Parents ask me all the time, what did I do that caused him to be ill? Did I not love him enough? Did I not? And I tell them the same thing, every person. Unless you abused your child, you play no role in their mental health problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly we know we could traumatize a child and give them a mental health problem. So a person could be culpable from that perspective. But every parent I've ever worked with desperately loved their child, and that's why they were seeing me, was to try to get them help. So really, you know, it's a broken world, and you know, what you're seeing in your child is just like what you see in yourself when you're ill and struggling, are the effects of a broken world. And it reminds us that we desperately need a savior. But that being said, understand, you know, here's the hopeful part. The hopeful part is that your child has the same spiritual needs that every other person in the world does. They desperately need Jesus. They have a divine purpose and plan that God has laid out for their life. And that mental health problem that they have does not preclude that. You know, God is sovereign over mental health problems, and that, you know, that child was given to you as a gift and a reward, and God will equip you to be able to effectively raise them and so that they will be able to go on and fulfill that purpose and plan. And so, you know, mental health issues are highly, highly treatable. You just have to find the right care that you need, and that's a problem. The system doesn't work all that well. Yeah. But if you can find the correct treatment, which you have to be the advocate for your child, absolutely, they can be better than they are today. In fact, they can live a wonderful quality of life. And in many instances, depending on the illness, they can live a life much like people with diabetes do, where, you know, every day of your life you're a diabetic, but it's just a nuisance. It's not that it alters your life significantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really like what you said about not feeling shame. We don't want parents, especially if their children, to feel shame. Like you said, they don't necessarily have anything to do with what their child is dealing with. And obviously it hurts them too sometimes to see maybe their children are suffering, but obviously God still has a plan. He is sovereign. He allowed those trials in that person's life for a reason. And I've heard amazing stories of, for example, little kids with autism, God working through them prophetically and supernaturally and things like that. So he definitely has a huge plan for their life, no matter what
they're
going through.
You know, even in ancient times, in biblical times, mm-hmm. And there's some weird references, kind of side references to it in the scripture, but people that had madness, that obviously they had no, you know, the people had no idea what was wrong with them, and many instances they thought it was spiritual. And oftentimes they were just allowed to roam the city freely because it was thought that individuals that were like that actually had that they were more open to spiritual revelation, that they, and then people would follow them and listen to them because they thought, because they were kind of so open and had no boundaries, that God or a spirit might actually speak through them. And so some of the people that I've worked with that have serious mental health problems are some of the most spiritually kind of hungry and godly people I've ever met, and yet they struggle so much. And they just fight through that. They fight through it. So they can be tremendously inspirational. But again, there is absolutely hope. Any mental health care provider that would tell a family that there was no hope for their child to ever develop well beyond the potential that was thought of really isn't doing a good job. And I would recommend that you move on to someone else.
Yeah, definitely well said. So I think your book is going to help a lot of parents because it gives practical advice from a medical standpoint, talking about neurological imbalances of chemicals like glutamate and serotonin. I thought that was interesting. It gives symptoms, treatment options, biblical stories. So, for example, how can a family determine if medication like SSRI is appropriate for their child? Because it's kind of a controversial topic. Like, should I consider medication for my child?
Right, and I would say this. It's controversial, not because medication is controversial. It's controversial because it's just controversial whether you should give children who are at a tremendous developmental point. I mean, their brains are growing, their bodies are growing. You know, should you give them medicine? Because obviously there's a negative side to taking any medication for anybody, but particularly a child. So that's the aspect. There is a negative side. And so, I like to try to get away from that idea that somehow we shouldn't take medicine for mental health problems because it's like anything else. But, one of the things parents have to understand is that most psychiatric medications, I mean, the vast majority, probably 90% or more, have never been tested in children.
Hmm.
That doesn't mean they're not prescribed in children. They are, but they're prescribed off-label, which means that the physician is using their own judgment. They haven't necessarily been FDA approved for that use in a person of that age. And so, to begin with, the diagnosis of children is very difficult because children do not, some illnesses manifest in children. They look very similar to what it looks like in an adult. Other illnesses, when they manifest in children, they look completely different. In fact, almost to the point that they look like they're a different illness, perhaps, than what an adult has. So we have to be careful because we have to understand that children are not just little adults. Their bodies work differently. They're in a developmental phase. Their brains work differently. They don't have the verbal and cognitive skills to express their emotions the same way as an adult. So we have to look at them as different. So it's very important that you go to a child and adolescent psychiatrist and or a child and adolescent psychologist for treatment. Don't just get the medication from your pediatrician. Don't just go to a psychiatrist who also works with adults but kind of works with children sometimes too, get a specialist for that. And then, you know, investigate the medication. Ask the physician. I mean, you're giving my child Zoloft. Has Zoloft been tested in children my child's age for what you're giving it to them for? And, you know, moms and dads know better. You know, they know their child better than anybody. And so you need to watch it. And then also you need to say, what, you know, what are we looking for? What's the expectation here? How long before we expect to have an effect? You know, what will you do if we don't see an effect? You need to have some outcome measures. And so question the physician and be that person that's watching for changes. If you don't see a change within, you know, within a reasonable period of time, which would probably be more like a 2 to 3 months, you don't see a significant change, well, then something has to change. You have to either change medications. So, you know, you always want to take the lowest amount of medication that you can. And the other thing I want to say is this. When a person receives therapy, talking therapy, in addition to medication, they will take less medication. So, and if you ever want to have a chance of getting off medication, you absolutely have to be involved in some kind of psychotherapy, some talking therapy. So get your child into therapy in addition to medication. Medication is just one tool, and medication by itself will never be enough. So get them into therapy, and then the hope is they can take less medicine and over time hopefully not have to take medication at all.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And you mentioned therapy. Something I know some of our listeners, a question our listeners have is, should I see a Christian psychiatrist or psychologist? Do they necessarily have to be Christian? Why is that important?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I get asked that all the time when we're out doing our presentations and our training and stuff. And I look at it this way. Again, everybody's going to have a different view. And so I think it's really up to the family, you know. But I would say this, a psychiatrist is only going to prescribe medication.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go to a Christian psychiatrist, then I'm assuming you also probably go to a Christian dentist and a Christian, you know, physician that treats your gout. And, you know, I mean, they're not talking to you about your feelings and your thoughts and things like that. They're just giving you medicine for your symptoms. So I don't really see a need for the psychiatrist necessarily from a, you know, professional perspective to be a Christian. I really encourage that you're at least in a faith and affirming environment. You know, I would never, everyone that we refer to, we've interviewed, and we have a very large database of referrals here in the Houston area, and it has to be a faith-affirming environment. I don't want someone going into a setting where they're going to mention their faith, and then the practitioner's just going to poo-poo that away like that's some kind of mythology or something. So I want at least a faith-affirming environment. But I don't, you know, for a psychiatrist, I don't necessarily believe they need to be of the same faith or a Christian per se. They just need to be good at what they do. For a therapist, I know people have varying views. You know, again, I think spiritual growth and spiritual guidance and pastoral care, I think all those things should be anchored in the church. I don't think that we send our children or our ill individuals out to people that are professionals. You have to remember, I mean, this is their job out there. It's, you know, and I don't think we send it out there and hope, oh, well, they'll take care of their spiritual life. And they'll fix their mental health problem. So I think the church is where they should be getting their spiritual guidance or pastoral care. So I think they should be meeting with a pastor or a lay counselor or somebody within the church regularly for that aspect. And so that's why I don't, you know, really, it doesn't really matter to me whether the person is a Christian or not, as long as, again, it's a faith-affirming environment. And so now, you know, within our database, we have lots of Christian therapists that we happily refer to when people ask, I would like to go to someone who's Christian. Great. No problem. But, you know, I would, you know, I just want the person to be a quality therapist because they're just working on, you know, dealing with anxious thoughts, dealing with negativity. They're dealing with a lot of things that you could deal with and not necessarily discuss the faith. But when faith comes up, I would want to make sure that, again, that was anchored in the church, not necessarily anchored out in the, you know, what if that person could be telling them anything out there, whereas really they came to the church for help. So I think it's up to the individual. There's a lot of great Christian counselors out there. There's a lot fewer people that advertise themselves as Christian psychiatrists. But if you want to go to a Christian counselor, you certainly can find one. The problem comes in here, and I'll end with this on this section. is that there aren't a lot of Christian counselors that work with people with serious mental illness. They normally deal with counseling issues, marriage and family things, things like that. Not to say that they're not out there. There's just fewer of them. So it's harder to find, say, someone who's a Christian therapist who works with children who have bipolar disorder or something like that. So it becomes a little bit more difficult the more kind of filters you put up to what kind of a person you want.
Yeah, those are good points. And definitely going back to the church aspect, that's obviously why we need to make sure that more awareness is raised within the church, because I think some people have had negative experiences in the church that make them think that it's not a safe place to talk about mental health. And you suggest that actually that's the first place that they should go for therapy. So that's why I'm doing this podcast. And I just think that more people need to be talking about it, so more people are aware that, hey, the church does care. They should know how to help. And before we go, how can our listeners connect with you online and find your upcoming book, which is called Grace for the Children?
Yeah, they can go to, we have a website that supports our churches that we've trained and offers a lot of resources. It's called the Mental Health Gateway. So they just go to mentalhealthgateway.org. It's all together, mentalhealthgateway.org. And there's all kind of videos there on all types of different mental health issues. There's online training to lead support groups. We have all the support group curricula, lots of downloadable stuff, databases to find providers, all kinds of stuff there. They also can connect with us directly through there. And they can find my books and all that kind of stuff. But it's a great place to go, particularly if you're interested in trying to develop a mental health ministry at your church, or you're looking for resources for yourself or your family.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us. And tune in next time for another episode in our mental health series on the Charisma News podcast.